Okay, the case for us now is 5-25-0111, People v. Amos Bullocks. James, is it Wozniak?
Wozniak.
Wozniak, sorry. And Ms. O'Brien? All right. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, if you want to come to the lectern and state your name, please, and begin when you're ready.
Counsel, may it please the court, good afternoon, justices. My name is James Wozniak. I'm with the State Appellate Defender's Office, 1st District Office. I'm here to represent Appellant Amos Bullocks. Before the trial court accepted Amos Bullocks' guilty plea, the state first needed to present a sufficient factual basis to support that plea. The state's factual proffer's only direct evidence against Amos was the purported testimony of Naisha Farrar, where the state claimed that she would have testified that Amos pushed her down, stood above her, shot her in the neck, then shot her a second time as she ran, and she saw Amos dragging Vanita Allen, the deceased in this case, into the woods. Over a decade later, however, Naisha Farrar provided an affidavit that showed that her statements to police, the same statements that were used by the state in its proffer, were false. Those false statements led to a chain of events where Amos pled guilty, apologized at sentencing, and was sentenced to 38 years in prison. Amos's post-conviction petition made a substantial showing of a colorable claim of actual innocence, and this court should reverse the dismissal of his post-conviction petition and remand this matter back to the circuit court for a third-stage evidentiary hearing. Without Farrar's purported testimony, the state's guilty plea proffer was insufficient to prove that Amos committed first-degree murder. In fact, without Farrar's testimony, there was absolutely no evidence presented by the state that Amos was the person who shot and killed Vanita Allen. Farrar's affidavit stated that what she told police was a lie, and she did not know who shot her. The state presented no other eyewitness testimony linking Amos to the shooting, no evidence of fingerprints or DNA or any other physical evidence was presented either. Simply, the state's entire proffer rests on Farrar's purported trial testimony, testimony that, according to Farrar's affidavit, was false. The evidence contained in Farrar's affidavit was newly discovered, material, non-cumulative, and of such a conclusive nature that it would probably result in an acquittal, which is the standard set forth by our Supreme Court in People v. Reed. Amos's petition made the requisite substantial showing at the second stage, and his petition should be advanced to an evidentiary hearing where Farrar could be called to testify, and the state could present whatever evidence it deemed appropriate.
Counsel, the trial court, in its written order, found that the defendant had admitted to committing this crime at the sentencing hearing and found that that admission rebutted the affidavits that were presented and then prevented the defendant from prevailing on his claim of actual innocence. Can you explain or tell me why you feel that ruling was incorrect?
I think twofold, Your Honor, is that number one, had Ms. Farrar testified, or the testimony that was presented in the state's offer, been similar to what she laid out in her affidavit, there would have been no guilty plea or sentencing where Amos would have made those statements. When you take then those statements, as I laid out in the briefs, although they're vague and they do offer a sense of remorse, but they don't amount to a judicial confession. And as our Supreme Court laid out, and People v. Reed, a person who has pled guilty, which is accepting a factual basis and pleading guilty to the fact, still can raise an actual innocence claim even after a plea of guilty.
The statements that the court referred to at sentencing, as I reviewed the record, the defendant, quote, said, "I let my emotions overrule my mind in resolving taking one's life and attempting another." And then went on to say, quote, "Not many have the ability to admit their faults and wrongdoings when they have done something unjustified. so I hope me confessing about my actions brings closure to all the families. I take full responsibility for my actions. And then in the trial court, I believe, asked the defendant, why did you do it? He said, I mean, it wasn't a premeditated act. It wasn't like I sit back and masterminded it. It just happened. So why does that not, why do those statements not constitute an admission?
Amos was facing a range of sentencing. I would view it as him expressing remorse and trying to get some consideration at sentencing. They are strong statements showing that from a defendant that. As the circuit court here took as admissions of guilt. But what we also have here is a factual basis that was presented by the state, and that factual basis laid out entirely the testimony of Nyesha Farrar. Nyesha Farrar is now, more than 10 years later, submitted an affidavit saying that those statements I provided to police and the state relied on the factual basis were not true. That she lied. She even concludes in her affidavit, although she doesn't say, she says, I don't know who shot me, but she concludes that, I hope that this affidavit serves, it helps Amos, and that, and I know that he's not going to get all the time back that he's already served. So when you're presented with that, there is real doubt of what, whether or not this case proceeded to a trial, whether or not Amos would have been found guilty or acquitted, and the only way to sustain or alleviate that doubt is to move this to an evidentiary hearing where Ms. Farrar could be called to testify, obviously Amos and his brother Brian, and the state could present whatever evidence they may have had that they didn't present at the proffer for either maybe it didn't exist or maybe they had it and they felt they didn't, it wasn't necessary to present that. They have the opportunity at an evidentiary hearing to present that, and then a court would be in a better position to take Ms. Farrar's testimony, Amos's, Bryant's, whatever evidence the state has, including what statements Amos made on the record, to determine whether or not Amos's conviction should be reversed and this set for a new trial, or to, at that point, deny his post-conviction. But Ms. Farrar, based on what factual basis we have from the state presented, there's real doubt as to what evidence the state had, and it can only be resolved in an evidentiary hearing.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Karen Wozniak, maybe I'm misunderstanding the thrust of your argument here. Are you presenting a position that says that because a witness later recants that invalidates the basis for the plea originally made in the case?
I don't think it's not invalidating the plea. But we're asking for it to move this to an evidentiary hearing. So what we have, the court has to, the trial court need to take Ms. Farrar's affidavit as true. Presented with what the factual basis there was that the state laid out as proper at the guilty plea, the only evidence that the state presented was Ms. Farrar's testimony, which has now been countered by her affidavit. That conflict should be resolved at an evidentiary hearing where a court can then see Ms. Farrar's mannerisms, what she testifies to, maybe she will delve further into the facts and the scenarios to be. And then to be sorted out at evidentiary hearing whether or not.
What I'm saying, I think, let's come at it from a different angle. You're not suggesting that the questionnaire is really that should advance to the third stage,
correct.
Is it not?
Yes.
What does that have to do with what factual basis of the plea was as stated?
But the fact, because if you take the state's factual basis that they presented, it's resting entirely on what Ms. Farrar's purported testimony is. Ms. Farrar is now saying in an affidavit that that's not true. And if you take them, essentially cancel out her statements, that factual basis based on her affidavit, the state didn't present a sufficient factual basis. And the factual basis is to lay out to a court, if this case proceeded to a trial, you know, is there a sufficient finding that a defendant would be found guilty? And what the Reed court has laid out is that the standard in the post-conviction scenario like this is that whether the result of retrial there would be an acquittal. Well, all we have on the record is what the state proffered, and that's now been canceled, essentially canceled out by Ms. Farrar's affidavit. So there's a real, if that's all the state has, and Ms. Farrar's testifying as to what her affidavit would be, there would be a real chance that Amos would be acquitted at a trial. But again, all we're asking is this to move to an evidentiary hearing so that Ms. Farrar can testify, the state can present whatever evidence it wants to present, Amos can present whatever evidence he should wishes to present, and let the circuit court determine that. I see that my time is up. I will save anything else. Are there any questions before I...
Any questions?
No, thank you.
All right, you'll have time for that, although thank you. All right, Ms. O'Brien. Good afternoon, Your Honors, Counsel, and may it please the Court. My name is Valerie Osment O'Brien, and I represent the state in this matter, the people of the state of Illinois versus Amos Bullocks. So the defendant's sole argument on appeal is that his amended post-conviction petition made a culpable claim of actual innocence based on Naisha Farrar's affidavit, who was the only eyewitness who had originally identified the defendant as the shooter, but who now claims that she did not see who shot her or killed Benita Allen. The state's position is very straightforward. This court should conclude that the trial court properly dismissed the defendant's amended petition for post-conviction relief, so I will address 3 points today based on that proposition. The defendant's assertion of innocence is directly refuted by the record. Second, even assuming for argument's sake that Farrar would testify consistent with her affidavit, she did not say that the defendant was not the shooter. She just stated that she didn't know who shot at her. And third, the differences between all of the affidavits can easily be reconciled by a common sense reading of the record that the defendant was the shooter and the murderer. Therefore, this newly discovered evidence would probably not lead to an acquittal if the defendant's case proceeded to trial. According to People v. Washington, a post-conviction petition makes a substantial showing of actual innocence with evidence that's newly discovered. The state's not contesting that. Material and not cumulative. The state is also not contesting that. And third, which the state does contest, is it must be of such conclusive character that it would probably change the result on retrial. Because there was no trial in this case, it's a little bit of a different standard. The standard for a plea is that the factual basis to support the plea is held to a less stringent level of proof, require only that the basis of which the court could reasonably conclude the defendant actually committed the acts constituting the offense to which the defendant is pleading guilty. So, because the evidence must be clear and convincing, the standard inherently requires the court to consider the evidence to be reliable. So it's a little different than if we had actually went to trial. And the conclusive character element refers to evidence that, when considered along with the trial evidence, would probably lead to a different result. And this element is the hardest element to overcome. It is extraordinarily difficult to meet, and courts rarely grant post-conviction petitions based on claims of actual innocence due to this standard. The defendant argues that the amended post-conviction petition made a colorable claim of actual innocence based on Farrar's affidavit. Well, as Your Honor pointed out, at the sentencing hearing, the defendant made a statement in allocution and started out by saying, first and foremost, I want to apologize for my actions and for the pain and suffering I have inflicted on all three families. I understand what I did was unjustified and against the law. He went on to say, I let my emotions overrule my mind and result in taking one's life and attempting another. That is a direct confession. It took a lot out of me to confess about my actions, but I feel it was the right thing to do. I have lost loved ones to the streets, and I know what it feels like waking up without them, so I fully understand the pain and suffering I put these families through. And Not many have the ability to admit their faults and wrongdoings when they have done something unjustified, so I hope me confessing about my actions brings closure to all the families. I take full responsibility for my actions. So this wasn't just a case of the defendant expressing remorse and he might have pled guilty for other reasons. This was directly admitting to the offenses and apologizing to the families for, again, I quote, taking one's life and attempting another.
So can we consider, counsel argued that Farrar's affidavit stating that she lied about her earlier statements to police and that those earlier statements supported the factual basis for the plea, now that's being called into doubt such that there was no proper factual basis for the plea. Are we able to consider these arguments at this stage on this type of petition?
You are able to, yes, Your Honor. However, it's not necessary in this case because of all of the other evidence that was put forward, regardless if there was a trial or not. Just because that was one of the only few things the state gave in its factual basis for the plea doesn't mean that that's all the state had or would have put on at trial. So basing the argument on that, we have no idea what the state would have went through discovery, they would have interviewed witnesses, they would have done all these things and would have had a lot more evidence. So the fact that that's what their whole argument hinges on, I don't think should persuade this court to overrule the trial court's decision in this matter. Not to mention that the affidavits do not support the defendant's claim of actual innocence. The defendant argues that his and Brian's affidavits averred that the defendant did not fire a gun but was instead shot by another person. However, a key difference between Brian and the defendant's affidavits is who they claimed the actual shooter was. Brian's affidavit stated that he was able to identify the person that the girls were walking with as Izzy Montgomery, who they went to school with, so purportedly he would have known him fairly well and would have recognized him immediately. Brian saw Farrar hand something to Izzy, and then suddenly they turned around, pointed the gun at me and the defendant, and started shooting. However, the defendant's affidavit said that once he and Brian ran after the girls, he saw Alan pass Isaac Washington something, who then said something to the girls, that the girls then took off running, and that Isaac then turned and started shooting at him and Brian. Accordingly, neither of their affidavits who claimed that the actual shooter was Izzy Montgomery nor the defendants who claimed that the actual shooter was Isaac Washington support his claim of actual innocence at all. It couldn't even be on the same page as to who was actually doing the shooting, especially considering they were supposedly schoolmates with said person. They didn't even know who was who. Farrar's affidavit stated, in part, that she never saw who was shooting or heard anyone besides Alan yelling that somebody was shooting at them to get up and run. This wasn't necessarily a lie in her first affidavit, or in the state's factual basis. It was just that she didn't see it. But based on the totality of the circumstances at trial, even if she testified consistent with that, it is very likely that a jury would still find the defendant did it, just because she never said who did it. She just said, I'm unsure who did it. Well, based on the totality of the circumstances of what we know, it's very likely that this would not result differently if this case went to trial. So even assuming for argument's sake that Farrar would testify consistent with her affidavit, she did not say that the defendant was not the shooter. She stated that she never saw who was doing the shooting. Moreover, in comparing her affidavit with the defendant's self-serving affidavit, the two affidavits fundamentally differed on who was present in that Farrar's made no mention of Isaac, or Izzy for that matter, at the time of the shooting at all, which is a very material detail given the implication that Isaac or Izzy or whoever was actually the shooter and not the defendant. And finally, as the trial court's order dismissing the defendant's petition stated, the differences between the affidavits can be reconciled by a common sense reading of the record. The defendant was the shooter and the murderer. At the sentencing hearing, the defendant was asked by the sentencing judge, "So, defendant, why did you do it?" The response consisted of the following relevant statements from the exchange. I mean, it wasn't a premeditated act. It wasn't like I sat back and masterminded it. It just happened. One thing led to another. Basically, I just clicked out. I do know I punched her. I pushed her down. That's all I can remember from there. Yet, in his statement in elocution, he specifically apologized for his actions and took accountability for taking one's life and attempting another. Accordingly, unless your honors have any questions, this court should conclude that the record positively rebuts the defendant's claim of actual innocence. Simply put, the affidavits that the defendant provided, coupled with the factual basis that described the evidence that the state would provide at trial, as well as the defendant's own words at sentencing, would probably not lead to an acquittal if this case proceeded to trial. Therefore, and for the foregoing reasons, the state respectfully requests for this court to affirm the trial court's judgment.
No, thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. My opposing counsel said, I think it's a little more than Nisha Farrar's affidavit is saying, I don't know who, she does say, I didn't know who shot me. But to then state that, you know, that somehow could still point that Amos is the shooter, because importantly, the factual basis that the state offered was Nisha Farrar's purported testimony was going to be that she was pushed to the ground by Amos. He stood over her, shot her in the neck. She got up and ran. She was shot a second time. She looked back, and she saw Amos dragging Vinita Allen into the woods. None of that is in the affidavit. In the affidavit, she says, I'm running. Vinita says, someone is shooting. I'm struck in the neck. I continue to run. I'm struck a second time. And she concludes her affidavit by saying, I realize my actions have resulted, and I can't replace nor give back all the years that Amos has missed. However, it's my sincerest prayer that with me coming forward, that my truth helps Amos. Yes, what Amos said at sentencing was strong words that a court could, it obviously took as a confession. But these are very strong words from the sole eyewitness that was proffered by the state. I don't know if the state has other evidence. As opposing counsel says, she doesn't know either. None of us know. And maybe they do. But that's for an evidentiary hearing for the state to sort of, they could present other evidence that they may not have presented in the factual basis that they could have presented at trial. The conflicts between all the affidavits could be sorted out, because at the second stage, a circuit court has to just take every single affidavit as true. Even if they conflict with each other, they're all true. Those conflicts can be resolved potentially at an evidentiary hearing. So again, what we argue is that Amos has made a substantial showing of a constitutional claim of actual innocence, that this court should reverse the appellate court's dismissal of Amos's post-conviction petition in order this case be remanded for third stage evidentiary proceedings. Are there any other questions from the court?
No, thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Your
Honor. Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. We will take this matter under advisement. We will issue a ruling in due course. Of course, in this court, in due course means we will need some time to obviously have a proposed order and put that together for everyone. So just be patient with us, obviously. All right. Thank you very much.